Namaste. So in this series on Sanatana Dharma, today we take up the subject of one God or many gods or one God and many gods. Now, at times this discussion is really very puerile because they don't contradict each other. It is like saying a person who is author and doctor and husband or housewife, and he walks, sings, writes, are all different people. They are all aspects of the one person. So the whole question can be very summarily almost dismissed, saying that the many gods are the different aspects of the one God. That makes it very simple. But still, because often we see this question going around and it's answered in very strange ways. One of the ways is that it is to allow for plurality of approaches. You know, there are different ways we can approach God. So there are different gods which are there through which whom we can approach. But even this does not answer the question fully, because still the question of anthropomorphism remains. That, okay, these many gods are conceptions of the human mind as a concession given to human nature for its complexity, that I can approach through, I have created an image of Shiva through whom I can approach. I have created an image of Krishna through whom I can approach. But that's not how Sanatana Dharma operates. See, this is a bottom-up view, where we as human beings try to understand that which is far beyond us. But the principle of Sanatana Dharma is it's based on the yogic experience, meaning thereby one goes and discovers first what is the source and origin of all things. This is the first task. Sri Aurobindo would say that the first thing needful is to find the divine. All else comes later on. All this, including, you know, talking, is everything else comes later on. First task, first business of man is to discover the divine. And then when we have discovered the divine, then from there we start understanding rest of the creation. Because when we understand the source, then it's so easy. Because that's here, it has become this, it has become that, it has become the whole creation. So in Sanatana Dharma, it's not a conception of God, not a conception of gods. Conceptions belong to the human domain. And while human mind can, in a moment of illumination, conceive of things which it has not experienced, it's possible. Because human mind is also some kind of a reflection of that. Sometimes we can have a brilliant conception, luminous conception. Now, what is a conception? It is to catch a truth in the net of the thought. But truth always exceeds thought. So this is where we have to understand that it is not a conception but an experience. So to understand the gods, the one God and the many gods, you have to go back and start tracing the journey from top down. So this is what is called as a top-down view of creation. How did the gods come into existence? We got to know that. So in the Indian thought, one of the first questions that people ask, is he a being or is he non-being? Is he impersonal? Is it personal? So very often you'll hear people who are too much into one kind of understanding of Advaita, not the whole understanding, or into Buddhism, they'll say in Indian thought, God is impersonal, so it is all right. It is very much like science. Or some will say it is nothingness or a void. But if you read through the Indian scriptures very carefully, it speaks of God as being. Now, why as being, we'll come to that. Very logically, we can understand it. But let's start from there, that what is that about which people say, is it non-being, is it impersonal, etc. In Indian conception and experience, the origin is that which we can experience, but we cannot define it. The moment we define it, we lose it, because all definitions belong to the mind and the mind limits. Even at a very simple level, it applies. Let's say, for instance, what am I? Am I a body? Somebody would say, you are a body. So I'll say, yes, I have a body, but that's not me. You know, that's the common misconception. Even science says that this material universe is all. Yes, material universe is there, but it's not everything. So somebody will say that, you know, no, you are a tremendous energetic person, life energy. So I'll say, yes, that's true, but I am not only that. Someone will say, oh, wonderful thoughts, ideas, everything. Some will say action, some will say will, impulses, all these things. It is true that I am all these things. But still, who is it that has become all these things? That's not me. Now, when you go even at a very basic level, at an individual level, you realize that actually this I, at the most you can say, is goes beyond the whole realm of this apparatus which we call as nature. But what that I is, you cannot pinpoint. It will be like a very vast impersonal state. So that kind of experience that yogis had when they started this process of going within and trying to understand, they realized that beyond nature, there is a state which is very impersonal, wide, universal state. It's everywhere. Once you have the experience, you can experience it anywhere and everywhere. It is the base on which the entire movement of nature is going on. But they were seekers. So they said, but what is hidden in this void? And this was a valid question. Why it was a valid question? If impersonal and universal is the basis, is the ultimate, then how so many existences have come, joy has come, sorrow has come, how to explain all this? So in Sankhya, it was explained by creating a division. That's why sometimes you'll see Sankhya is regarded as an atheistic school, but others also speak of it as a theistic school. There is the Purusha. What is Purusha? Purusha is nothing to do with nature. This is Prakriti. So Purusha is just a witness. All the movement of Prakriti gets reflected in the Purusha, and then it has a sense of me. So actually there is not even an I. There is an eternal witness. It's like when I am sleeping, so who is this I? Asleep. When I am dreaming, who is this I? Dreaming. When I am doing this action, cooking, where is the I? It's a cook. When I am teaching, teacher. When I am learning, student. So the movements of Prakriti get reflected in the Purusha, and otherwise Purusha has got nothing to do. So the process was, you detach yourself from Prakriti. If you allow this reflection to continue, you will be bound by all the movements. Very logical. If you look at Sankhya system, very logical when it comes to that. Buddha said something very similar, except that he didn't use the word self in that sense. So you are watching a movie and you are unhappy, you are happy, depending on what scene is playing in front of you. You identify with it and you have tears in your eyes or laughter. But if you want to come out, what is required? Suddenly you turn away and say, oh, this movie, I don't need to watch it. Nobody has compelled me to watch it. And then you step out and you are a free person. So this is the method which Sankhya uses to liberate. But there were yogis who went further. That's why you see in the Gita, Sri Krishna starts with Sankhya. Sankhya Yoga Nam, where the buddhi has to detach from the workings of nature. Instead of turning outward and downwards, it turns inward and upward. So it starts with that. And then you discover the pure intelligence goes and discovers that state, which is a kind of moksha. It is not difficult to arrive at that stage. Frankly, it is not difficult. It's a little bit of persistence. That's why the Gita starts with that. And says, what is the sign of such a person? You know, apurnamada. It describes that, you know, like rivers flowing into an ocean. But the seekers, the yogis, that's why it says greater than Sankhya is the Jnana Yogi is the yogin. So who is the yogin? Yogin says that this is self, this is nature. But what is the link? What is the yogin actually trying? He is trying to connect this with that. That is the yoga he is engaged in. So how to do it? Now we can use a little bit of logic again. We all have some existence. That's why, you know, if somebody asks, do you exist? What will be your reply? We will say, are you a fool? Isn't it? Of course I exist. Limited existence. Does a worm exist? Yes, worm exists. Does a tree exist? Tree exists. So there is existence. And all this existence together creates material existence. Similarly, we have a vital existence. All the energy in the creation. Then we have a mental existence where we exist in our thoughts. And all this thought world is a mental existence. Where does existence come from? So this was a question. If existence is experienced here, there must be a source of existence. Okay? Similarly, are you conscious? Yes, I am conscious. Is a tree conscious? Maybe. Latest experiments? Yes, some consciousness is there in the trees. Is animal conscious? Yes. Less than me, but yes. Is matter conscious? Again, if you go by the experiments in pure physics, you will say, maybe there seems to be something like a consciousness in matter, but very limited. So there is consciousness everywhere, right up to human beings. So where does consciousness come from? Then there is ananda. What is it that drives us? The state of joy, where does it come from? Everybody's, you know, wants joy in one way or the other. So everywhere in creation, you will see again this delight, even in material nature. The proof, very simple, as they say, proof of the pudding is in eating it. When people get very worked up in their everyday lives, harassed by the city life, what do? If they can't go inside, what do? They go to the mountains or in nature. What is it in nature that you go there and suddenly you feel a state of joy? Because even in material nature it is there. In animals it is there. In plants it is there. Even ferocious animals. If you don't get very near a tiger or a lion or a cobra and watch it on the TV screen, it's nice. Oh, wow. But let it come near, then there is a shrinking. Why? Because now the ego is involved. Otherwise, it's something, because that joy is there in creation. So where does this joy come from? So how did they proceed? They said, all of us are experiencing these things in a limited way. Where is the origin? So they started tracing it to the origin. Can mental consciousness be expanded into something greater? Can this existence, we can experience greater existences? Are there greater existences than human? And so on and so forth. Is there greater states of ananda than the limited human joy which is always marred with sorrow? So when they went trailing it further and further, they first discovered that impersonal state. But they were not happy. Where did all this come from? So they took two routes. One was piercing through the void. Some yogis did that. Others took another route, we see described in Savitri. Mind reaches a state of impersonality and doesn't know what to do. But in Savitri, we see another route through the heart. And then they discovered that beyond the void, impersonal, universal state, there is the existence, consciousness, and bliss of the one. And they use the word Sachidananda. Sachidananda is exactly that. So all of us are miniature Sachidananda. Same thing nature is trying to reproduce. Like when you go to a temple, you will see that outside all little temple replicas, little deities. So, you know, we all bring some murti, vigraha and put it in the house and say, what do you say? Do you say ki this is a vigraha? If somebody says that, you know, you have Lord Rama's murti or Krishna and you are praying. So, and somebody comes and says, oh, what do you have in your house? Whom do you worship? You say, I worship Lord Krishna or Lord Rama. Show me. So you take to the image. Now the person will say, but it's an image. What will you say? Maybe image for you. For me it's a reality. So we can simultaneously say that all human beings in their essence, not only human beings, all creation in its truth, secret truth is Sachidananda. It is represented in a lesser form. Like an image is an image. It's a diminished image. Nobody will say that Krishna is all the time standing with a basuri in hand. It will be like too much. Okay, but it is a representation of a reality which you can experience. So everything is a limited Sachidananda. But since Sachidananda exceeds all of that, therefore in everyone there is an effort to arrive at that totality, because he is behind everyone. In everything, Sachidananda is everywhere. So that's why in ignorance we try to have this, have that, this person, that person, because by multiplying we want to have that totality, but we cannot have it that way. Physically also it's impossible. But by contacting this Sachidananda within us or beyond us at any level, we discover truly the whole creation, because that is the essence. So Sachidananda, that is the being. And from that one being, all other beings derive their beingness. So, where did Sachidananda come from? This is the next logical question. No, where did God come from? In India, he is the one being who is known as Sachidananda. These are his three principal aspects. So, he comes from a state of which nothing can be spoken. You can use nothing, everything. The moment you define, you can use the word being, you can use the word non-being. But the best way to describe it is beyond being and non-being. You can't define, describe. So it is Parabrahman. Just don't know what it is. So now we have the entire hierarchy. At the origin is that of which nothing can be spoken. So you have the Nasadiya Sutta in the Rig Veda, that covered with a double darkness. You can't speak anything about him. But out of him emerges the being of Sachidananda. How does it emerge? Now comes the very interesting story. There are many stories like that. Some stories say how he emerged. Other stories don't describe. Say out of him he brought forth. If you read the Bhagavad, you say he brought out of himself that being who is lying on the cosmic waters. So that's the image of Vishnu. No? Then from the navel creation emerges. If you read Vishnu Purana, it's the Brahma. So we'll come to that story, but step by step. So now this being, between the emergence of this being and that Parabrahman, there is a crucial step that happens. So in Parabrahman, what is hidden? If all this creation is emerged out of that, all this possibility is there inside. It is infinite. So he is infinite power, infinite knowledge, infinite. So the moment creation has to start, we can use the word willed, all these are human terms, but let's say within there is a stir, and out of that, the infinite knowledge and infinite power creates a first form, the being of Sachidananda. So who is that infinite power and infinite knowledge? That is the Divine Mother. It is she who creates. Even the being of Sachidananda you cannot have. Because Sachidananda you can actually experience. No? In the subtlest vision you can actually see the divine. It's not just a conception. Parabrahman you cannot see. You cannot see here nothing. You can just dissolve in it. But Sachidananda, Brahma Swarup, you can actually have the darshan. So that means there is a form. That's how you have the darshan. No? Darshan means your sight defines whatever that light is. Of course cannot be this sight. It has to be something very different. So this form, the first, is created out of Divine Mother. So if you read the Bhagavat, you will see that these, all the three gods, they are wondering how they have come into existence. And then the Divine Mother manifests tremendous power. And she says, I have brought you forth. So what are we to do? You have to create the cosmos. How will we do it? Where is the Shakti? I'll give you Shakti. So see, with Brahma she becomes Saraswati, with Vishnu she becomes Lakshmi, and with Shiva she becomes Parvati. But even before we go to that, now the first four gods, this is one, Sachidanand. What are the aspects of Sachidanand? He is infinite existence, he is infinite consciousness, he is infinite delight. But consciousness has two aspects, knowledge and power. So we have the first four gods. Now they are named differently in different traditions. If you read Vaishnava tradition, it is called as Krishna, Balram, Pradyumna and Aniruddha. But I will take the image which is in the Puranas. The first four gods. Who are these first four gods? I mean, this is also Purana, Vaishnava Purana, Vishnu Purana. But who are these first four gods? Sat. Infinite existence. The Godhead who emerges, that aspect of the one which holds existences and builds existences is Brahma. What is the job description? He has to create many, many, many existences. So he builds all these forms, not only in the physical world, but in all the worlds. And then who will fill these forms with life? Consciousness as knowledge. That is Vishnu sleeping on his celestial couch. He animates all these in existences. And that is why there is a very interesting name of Lord Vishnu. Narayana. What the meaning of this name? He who is makes human beings his abode. But there is another name which comes even before Narayana. Vasudev, who is Vasudev? Somebody who is, whole creation is his dress. He is the one who is inside. He is wearing the robe. So as Vasudev, as Narayana, he animates the creation. But away from creation, he is Hari. What is Hari? Very interesting. You see, you have two names, Har and Hari. What is Hari? Hari is the one who takes away entire sorrow and suffering away. That's why he is Hari. So he absorbs everything. Beyond all that, he is Hari. But entering into creation as the one consciousness animating all things, he becomes, Narayana Vasudev. So why? What is his work that has been given to him by the Divine Mother? The work of preservation. What is preservation? Maintaining the balance of the cosmic order. That's why. Why is it that when there is adharma, it is Lord Vishnu who takes the charge? Because it is his work. He has to maintain the balance. He is not out to kill the asuras. This is a very wrong conception. But when asuras try to go beyond their limits, they try to conquer heavens, or they try to, subdue humanity and fill it with asuric impulses, then he says, now you are creating imbalance. He's one consciousness. You can't do it. That's why you talk about yagna, and everything comes with Lord Vishnu. And of course, Prajapati creates by yagna. He maintains by yagna. But then there is another aspect of creation, and that is the mighty destruction. All this creation, forms are all imperfect, so they have to be dissolved at some point of time. So when they are dissolved, the whole creation has to go through a phase of dissolution. Why? Because it has to move ultimately towards perfection. But that is still something of the future. We'll come to that step by step. So there is Shiva who emerges. Now why Shiva is the greatest god still? Though he comes later, if you read the Purana, it's very interesting. Why? Because Shiva is the one who can dissolve the entire creation. Even Vishnu and Brahma can be absorbed back into him. Their forms. That is the power of Shiva. So Shiva also becomes. So if you read the Purana, it's very interesting. But who is the fourth god? The fourth is he. When this entire creation is dissolved, when Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, last is Shiva, absorbed into the ultimate Adya Shakti, then the whole creation is being absorbed into someone, and that is imaged as a little child, baby, who takes all creation and keeps it in his stomach to bring it out when the next cycle starts. Who is that? That is Ananda. Now you see, it's so interesting. Existence and consciousness, the original Ishwara and Shakti, when they unite, the offspring, the baby is Ananda. So you have Satchidananda. And it's out of Ananda that creation emerges. That's why in everything there is a cry for Ananda. There is a very beautiful passage in Savitri. A hidden bliss is at the root of things. That's why the Upanishad says, Raso Vaisaha. If you go backward, ultimately you will arrive at Ananda. A hidden bliss is at the root of things. And he says that it is so strong, this need for bliss, which we don't understand. So he says bliss grows even on forbidden soils. You tell human beings that, if you do this, this is papa. He says, yeah, yeah. What he'll do? Exactly that. Because if it gives happiness, he'll do it. Afterwards, he will do this. Go to a temple, mosque, and do this. But he'll say, yes, 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 this is pap. Why? Actually, it's not about pap or punya. This is much later. It is limited, so it cannot give you ultimate joy. But it's okay, it's understood. You can't spring from a limited state of joy of a worm, which takes joy only in probably swallowing something, to that ananda. It is just not possible. So you have to go step by step by step. But of that we will speak later. What are these steps? Humanity cannot suddenly arrive at that ananda. So it has to start by exploring bliss. Where is bliss? It goes into material nature and says, ah, I feel nice, bliss, first humanity. Then it says, I've got bored. Why? It's not bored. It is seeking for infinite. So it explores vital nature. Wealth and power and desire and expansion of all these things. food and sexuality and 100 things it explores, 100 ways, emotions, and it gets joy, 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 then every joy followed by sorrow. So it says, no, 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 this is also not what I am seeking. So ascending further, it seeks that bliss in thought, idea, conception. You see, sign of a developed humanity, it takes delight in idea for the sake of it. It's not because what you are going to get out of it, but because I enjoy. You know, there are people who enjoy the world of ideas. But then it realizes that even every idea, conception, you don't know whether it's certain or not. So it says, no, I want still further. Then it takes delight in discovering the one self, which it is. Raso Vesa. So this Ananda is at the root of things. So now we have the quaternary of these four gods. Infinite existence, Brahma, infinite consciousness as Chidghan, Chetna, that is Vishnu, infinite force, Tapas, the mighty destroyer, consciousness is Tapas, Shiva, and infinite Ananda as Krishna. So these are the original four gods which emerge out of that. But then, as the story goes, which is very interesting, now these four gods create out of themselves, release energies which will go into creation. Now you will see that it's very interesting. How is Vishnuji creating? Now we come to that image. What is the next step? So Vishnu is sleeping on the celestial couch. Nice, good sleep. And asleep he is creating. How? Out of his navel there emerges a lotus on which Brahma is sitting. What does Brahma witness as soon as he comes out? According to Vishnu Puran, he sees that out of the wax in the Lord's ear, there is the emergence. And he is sleeping on what? Let's first describe that. On the waters, Shir Sagar, on a serpent couch. So symbolic image. What is this serpent? Mighty serpent. It's time, evolutionary energy, which is supporting him. It is also energy, evolutionary energy. That one tremendous energy has become evolutionary energy, becomes his couch. And he's sleeping on that, and Anant, that's why you call it Anant. It is infinitely releasing, and all this energy which is spreading out of the Lord, beautiful energy, full of delight, is the cosmic water, Shirisagar. It's like ripples going all over. And then the next step in creation is, it comes out of sleep, comes from the navel. Ever wondered why navel? Why not from the heart? Why not from the head? So, it's very interesting. So, there are two kinds of creation in Indian thought. The lower creation and the higher creation. So, where is the higher creation when the Lord is dreaming? You'll see Brahma creating all these worlds which are subject to all these problems. But is there any other world? Why the Puranas don't speak about it? There is a world, but it is hidden behind Vishnu's eyelids. They are the dream prints. Yogis can't know it. There is a very beautiful description of the Divine Mother in the kingdoms of greater knowledge. And Shurbindo describes that by knowing too much, they missed the one thing to be known. They thought that they have understood the Divine Mother, every pattern, everything they could map out. But they couldn't read what is in her dream prints. She has hidden in her eyelashes. Shurbindo used the image of the Divine Mother. So what is happening inside the eyes of Vishnu? There is another creation. That is the dream. So some places you will also see that Vishnu is the one being, and then out of him emerges Hiranyagarbha, the being who is in his dream state. All the worlds which will ever exist, they have not yet come into existence. But they are there, beatific states. So his eyes are closed. Why is he closed the eyes? Why doesn't he allow those worlds to emerge? Because you won't have forms that will ever be stable. So the out of the navel. So if you read the movement of Panch Prana, in human beings are built upon that, and you'll see that each of the gods has their own place. So you have the lower two pranas, the higher two pranas, and the samana, which is, you know, which balances the two. So you can say that Vishnu is somewhere sleeping in the center. And out of his eyelids closed, little ray of light is escaping. That is enough to build all these worlds. So this lower creation emerging from the lower pranadi, Brahma emerges. And the sign of it is that one of the first things that happens, Brahma is infinite existence, but he becomes, now he has to limit himself for this existence. So there is a God Brahma who belongs to the lower, and this is the original Brahma, which is the infinite existence. All the three gods have their original truth, and this is the reflection in the lower creation. So when Brahma emerges, he says, who am I? He doesn't know who he is. How can infinite existence doesn't know who he is? So he sees there is someone sleeping on the waters. It's a very beautiful story. Then out of him emerges these two fellows. Who are they? Their name is Madhu Kaitabha. So they are smart fellow. They also know that ultimately it is Adya Shakti. All these are Adya Shakti. Somehow they know. So they send a cry to Adya Shakti. Help us, help us. So she appears. What do you want? We should not be killed. Okay, you will not be killed. Now they cannot be killed, mind you. But they can be dissolved, they can be transformed. They can be converted. This comes in the story. Mother's story. But in the original story, it is only that nobody can kill us. All right. Now nobody can kill us. So they attack on Lord Vishnu. Now Brahmaji is totally... What is happening? Why Brahmaji is worried? Not about himself. All existence they will finish. They will disturb the balance. Because if Vishnu is not there, where is... They are trying to finish the one consciousness. So Brahmaji prays to whom? To Mahamaya. She appears. Again the Divine Mother. What does she do? She wakes him up. So what is this waking up? Out of ignorance, knowledge comes out. That is the waking up of Vishnu by the Mahamaya. She comes and says, wake up. So you see that there are two kinds of mayas. One is avidyamai, within which all this is happening. And the other is vidyamai. So she awakens that cosmic being. Wake up. This is actually an experience of the mother. She goes into the waters, and this Lord Vishnu is regarded as the first avatar. If you read the Bhagavad, that one Sachidanand actually put forth a being in the waters who will be the first avatar, out of whom the navel, everything emerges. But we'll come to that as and when. So, but right now, to connect with the story, so Mahamaya comes and she wakes up Vishnu. Now he opens his eyes and sees Madhu and Ketab. But you can't defeat them. So the war continues for 5,000 years. If you read it as a child, this story, you will feel very sad at the end. Why? Because Vishnuji is defeated by them. Isn't it? Anybody read this story? It's very terrible. When I read, I said, how can that happen? This is not fair. But you cannot defeat knowledge. So what Vishnuji does, he... First time you see the birth of division. Again, out of him, knowledge and ignorance, he plays with both. But as a child, you can't understand. I mean, somebody can understand. So what he does, he creates a division between Madhu and Kaitab. How? He says, anyways, I know I can't defeat you, but you know that I am God, I can grant you any boon. So Madhu and Kaitab are all puffed up. You will grant us boon. We will give you boon. Ask what you want. Vishnuji is waiting for the moment. He says, I just want that you guys die. Now, after all, they believe they are God. So what to do? They said, okay. So Lord Vishnu kills Madhu and becomes Madhusudanai. And Jagan Mata, as Mahamaya, kills Kaitab and she becomes Kaitabhi. If you read this story, just on the story level, it's very difficult to understand what's happening. But see, this opposition to the gods, it's created even before the gods have come. I mean, these are the four original. But even before all the other gods have come, Indra and all other gods, there is the two demons who are created. And what kind of demons? Invincible. They will change forms. You will kill one demon, their dynasty will continue. Another will come. Now, what are these demons? Why has the Divine Mother granted them this boon? Because it is through the mutual opposition that creation will progress. She is the evolutionary energy. She knows this. She is Adya Shakti. So she creates a kind of opposition at the base. Why? Because take an example. You see, when people need dough, aata gunte na, to kya karte hain? If it is very loose, what happens? Can you make chapati out of it? You can't make. If it is very hard, very difficult. So one of the ways is you keep doing, then you do, and you see when you are pulling it, it should be the right consistency. So the resistance should be right amount. If there is no resistance, you can't cook a nice meal. And if there is too much of resistance, again you can't do anything. So there is a certain resistance to the advance of evolution. That's why you have the constant battle of the gods and the titans. Through this resistance, evolution proceeds further. We'll talk about it later. We are putting many stories on hold. But there is a purpose, even in the Divine Mother, such a boon. Now we have these three gods who start running the show of creation. Cosmic waters. Now once Madhu Kataba is, that time they are gone, but actually they cannot be killed. So they will come again and again as lineage of demons. Now, because these asuras are there, out of them many, this whole state, inconscient, Mother speaks about it, that this whole consciousness, the moment it enters into limitation, infinite existence has become limited existence, where even Brahma doesn't know who he is. There's a whole story that who is greater. So then Shiva manifests, he says, I can absorb both of you. So they go up and down and they can't discover the end of that mighty original Jyotirling, column of light. They don't know. So Brahma tells a lie. He says, I have known the top. Now, it's not a lie. It is because by his nature, existences means you have to limit. You can't have. If you are living in a state of infinity, you can't create finite existences. So he says, I know the end. Whereas Vishnu has to maintain the balance. So it is infinity. Vishnu says, I don't know the end. So as the story goes, Shiva says, nobody will pray to you. Everybody will pray to Vishnu. But this story is not the way it is described. Brahma has to limit himself. That's why the four quarters, time, space, all these, because existence, this is a limited existence in which you are creating. But consciousness is not here. Consciousness goes, it connects the whole range from the least, darkest, inconscient. Consciousness forgets itself to become a point where it forgets itself in an electron. Right up to the supreme. It is the one thread. So he is aware of the infinity. He says there is no end. So he becomes, he is the one whom we worship. So this is how the story goes. And then in this complete forgetfulness, the consciousness has lapsed. From there the creation has to come back. How will it come back? That's when we have another story, which is there in Rig Veda, 10th Mandala. And there are different kinds of stories like that. There is the Purush Sukta is again about the existence different. He says, I am offering my body, but we'll not touch upon that. To bring back from that point, invisible point back. So the Divine Mother says, I'll go. So consciousness is lapsed into darkness. So all these three gods, four gods and the one, they decide to bring out many kind of emanations out of them. To keep the whole thing in a state of check and balance. So you will see always these gods, where do they go when they are in trouble? They'll go either to Shiva or to Vishnu. They don't go to Brahma. Why? Because actually, now again we see the stories where Vishnu and Shiva are one. Because consciousness has these two aspects. Knowledge and force. So that's why Hari Har. Basically, Shiva and Vishnu are two aspects of one reality. They maintain, Brahmaji's job is over. He has created the forms, he says, now I'll rest. And all the powers with them are also very clearly, representative. Brahma has to create. So how will he create? Through the power of sound, rhythms of the eternal. It's very beautifully described. If you read about the Panch Mahabhut, what is the first power out of that it emerges? It emerges in the form of ether, akash, with its characteristic quality of sound, vibration. But if you have these vibrations, how will you have creation? So this vibration has to be some disturbance within it, so that the same vibration begin to, as if they are clashing with each other. This is Matarishvan, Vayu. So out of ether or akash emerges Vayu Tattva. So people will say, but Vayu, Vayu is this Vayu. No, this is a physical manifestation. Vayu is wherever there is life. So what does Vayu create, prana create? Attraction and repulsion. See, even everywhere you will see this. So Vayu, by creating attraction and repulsion, creates the same state of ether is modified by Vayu, and it becomes as if there are different clashing forces, like waves, you see. Waves flowing smoothly and waves clashing with each other. So when waves clash with each other, you have some kind of form, but it cannot last. So out of Vayu, what comes out? Agni Tattva. What Agni does, for a moment, it tries to stabilize the form. So he Jat Vedas. It's the power, the energy, which holds these vibrations together, but only momentarily. So out of Agni, what comes out? The liquid state. Flowing. Now this etheric vibrations are taking a more concrete shape. And then out of liquid form, it becomes solidified and earth. This is the sequence. The same sequence actually science discovers. What is the next step after solid? Liquid. From liquid, gaseous. Isn't it? So you see actually, and how do you convert liquid to a gaseous state? By fire. So actually you see the same sequence. What is beyond gaseous? Gaseous escapes into the white sky. By its nature, it tends to go towards that. The same. So these are the Panch Mahabhut who emerge. And these Panch Mahabhut become the first five gods. Who are these? And they govern. Now you see, you have Indra. Indra from all the Indriyas. So you have these gods. You have Indra, the master of all these. Then you have Vayu, Matarishvan. You have Agni. You have Varuna for the Jal, and you have Bhudevi, Prithvi, different names which are called. So they all are the first five ones. But they have to be tutored into doing this job. So there is Brahmanaspati who will harmonize them, bring them together. Brahma will bring out Vaishvanara. You see how the gods are emerging. All these for creation. These four original gods will be there even when creation dissolves. But these are gods other who emerge because of the creation. So everywhere they are present. In everything, in the atom, you have these present. So these gods start weaving creation. Then out of them, many, many, many will come. And to speak about the goddesses, you have the original Brahmani or Saraswati with the Veena. Then with Vishnu, because Vishnu is the one consciousness, dharma, balance. So who is with him? Lakshmi. She is the goddess of harmony. Inner wealth. Because, you know, consciousness will take many, many aspects. So she is the goddess basically of harmony and beauty and wealth and love, which binds all things together. That's how Sri Aurobindo describes. And with Shiva, who sits? The tremendous power which can take the form of Durga and Kali and destroy the creation. So you see corresponding powers. And who is with Krishna? Krishna is a baby who is enjoying bliss. So you have Radha and Krishna forever entwined in bliss. If you read the description, Brahma, she was Brahma, and the word in Brahma's, you know, and the all-creating word. She was Brahma and the all-creating word. She was Shiva and the mighty Pusa in Shiva's lap. And then comes to, and Radha and Krishna forever entwined in bliss. That's their work. Together, Ananda, in that, so she is the power which is always there with Shri Krishna. But because Sri Krishna has to also enter creation, when he enters into creation, it's not Radha. It is Kali or somebody, you know, because in creation, it's a, one day creation will be ready for Radha and Krishna. So you have the four original gods, but otherwise these gods emerge when creation has gone into darkness and inconscience, it has to be saved. How do you save? Now many forms have to be created. So you have second line of gods. But the powers in the inconscient have an resistance. They don't want to come out. But Divine Mother starts the alchemy. Slowly starts telling them, come, come, come. We'll have something nice, beautiful. So they resist, they come out. The moment they come out, gods want to work on them. They fight with the gods. So constantly this tussle goes on, but the Divine Mother slowly, gradually convinces them to come out. And therefore this power which has gone into creation as Divine Mother is love. She is the golden bridge, the link between creation and the Creator. Love is beyond gods, it's beyond being and non-being, beyond manifestation and non-manifestation. But love normally in Srishti is Kamadeva, but it's not the original love. That's in the vital too, for the maintenance of lower creation. But love is in its original form, doesn't even have a form. That's why Shiva Parvati story you have, that he destroys the form of Kamadeva, he becomes Anang. Because if you really want to experience original love, you have to go beyond form. So you have two kinds of love that human beings experience in life, even human beings. One is the attraction to the form. Form is not only physical. It can be mental qualities, it can be other things. But there is a kind of love which is not connected with form. That is the love of Shiva in his heart. That is the kind of love that Mother Parvati awakens in him. The god of destruction becomes the god of love. It's a very crucial story, but again, put on hold. But coming back to our story, slowly creation emerges. And who is the one along with the gods who is with the Divine Mother? Now comes this last aspect of this story. There is this one being we spoke about. And this one being looks around, wants to be many, Satchidanand. So what comes out of him? The Divine Mother brings out many, many, many little points all within him to play with. It's like my finger, my feet, my head, you know, different. Each with its own cells which are specialized in doing this work. So all these little centers, multiple centers of concentration within the one being are originally the Jivatma. They come even before the gods. Gods come later. So actually, human beings are greater than the gods, but we have forgotten it. But that's a different story. Most human beings, it is better that they don't know that they are God, because they will become, act like asuras. Now these jivatmas, when the Divine Mother comes, they enter into the play, because these forms have to be supported by something of the divine inside. So all these little jivatmas, they send something of themselves into the play that identifies with the darkness and becomes the psychic being through a process of evolution. So what does it mean? It means practically, now take home points. In our origin, we are all one divine. We are all children of Satchidananda. So Hindu, Musalman, Christian, yesab, this is all ignorance. The difference is that Sanatana Dharma, people know it, whereas these fellows don't know it. So they fight, my God. But in Sanatana Dharma, there is only one infinite existence. Doesn't matter, you call him Allah, it's okay. But it is one infinite existence. But the religions which have come, these Semitic religions, they believe in only one type of God, one aspect of God, and one book, and everything gets over. Okay, so there is one truth. But in everyone, this Satchidananda is present, because all existences are derived from the one existence. All consciousness from one consciousness. All Ananda ultimately traces itself to that. But because it is limited, so it turns into happiness and sorrow. What is sorrow? Wanting a greater Ananda. If you look at the root of sorrow. And it gives us the secret. When we are in depression, we are actually looking for a greater thing. That's why we are depressed. But we thought I'll get greater thing here. No, you cannot. You have to go beyond and then you will get the greater thing. So that's one part of it. So we have everywhere that one who has become many. Then the second truth which comes from that is that this whole journey that we are experiencing is an evolutionary journey, whether it be the infinite serpent who is Anantanag, on whose hood Prithvi is there, or we take it that from the inconscient there is an emergence. So it's an evolutionary journey. Number three, in this journey, Divine Mother is all the time with us. People may not know it, or they may know it. So what is the difference? Big difference. When you journey without knowing that the Divine is with you, and when you journey knowing that the Divine is with you, what is the difference? The Gita describes it. One is the hard path. You are thinking you are alone. So what happens when you are alone? You may enjoy life for some time, but when there is a crisis, what happens? Oh, let me seek help from here, there, everywhere. But the original help is only from the Divine Mother. SOS in darkness went to Divine Mother. So, do you have to be a good boy to get help? No. Even in the inconscient, when the cry went, when consciousness vanished into zero point, she responded. So, we have at least some consciousness, whatever it be. So, she responds immediately. She doesn't judge us, doesn't condemn us. In fact, she likes it when we call her, because it's the original connect. So it means practically, whenever in difficulty or distress, don't say, oh, am I fit? Am I worthy? That's not how she looks at it. We are all her children. Just send an SOS. Mother, come. Mother, come. Mother, ma, ma. She will come. As simple as that. Fourth take-home point. All of us contain the gods and the asuras inside. Something of the inconscient is in all of us. And something of the gods is also in all of us. So what is they doing here? They are fighting. Conflict. Everybody experiences. Between good and bad. Good and bad are not the right terms. All the deva asura sangram is going on inside. And if you don't resolve it, what will happen? The body suffers, the mind suffers. When asuras are in the ascendance, all destruction, everything collapses towards inconscient, because that's their task, to resist the advance. When the gods are in the ascendance, everything is progressing. This is the difference. But you just can't progress like a leap. It's not possible. Because otherwise, remember, Vishnu's eyes are closed. Suddenly you see that blaze, creation will dissolve. That's why he keeps his eyes closed. So this is a slow process. It's okay. So what we should do? Man is very smart. He tries to see asura in others and God inside him. Or sometimes he takes the other route. I am bad, I am evil, I am worst. Then he identifies with the asura and asura say, oh, very good. That's what we wanted you to say. Come with us. Come with us means where? Despair, darkness, depression, suicide. So what we should say instead of that? We should say, I am Brahman the Eternal. What is the task? To convert the asuras within us. We don't have to worry about somebody else's asuras. Everywhere. So all these asuras originally were gods. They have fallen. You see, the four original gods became their opposites. And they are invincible like that, if you really look at them. But they can be converted or dissolved and transformed by the Divine Mother. Because she is the one out of whom everything, including the one, has emerged. That's why Shobindu repeatedly says, turn to her. Even Sachidananda comes out of her. So she is the one who can do whatever she feels like. Dissolve them, convert them. But because she loves the whole creation, she knows that this is also part of her Leela. So she is slowly taking them back home. So when you are in a journey, you will see all kinds of people. In the train, there are not only gods. Shivji ka barat. You have all asuras also. You can't say, I want only gods. First class compartment. There also they will be there. Probably more. Because asuras are always trying to be on top. Ambitious fellows. Gods are humble. They will say, give me a place down below, I will sleep. They know they are gods. Gods are gods. See, a person who is over ambitious is not sure of himself. You understand? It's like makeup. I keep using this. If you are beautiful, why would you make up? Isn't it? So somebody who knows oneself, why would he try to show or want things from outside to... It's different that you may get things or you are expressing yourself and you get a kingdom. That's a different thing. But wanting to usurp. So asuras are always underconfident. They are not sure. So they revolt. And they want to possess. Why they don't know? Because that's where they veil the knowledge. If they know that they are Brahman, they will also not do this. But that's what Brahma tried once. With that story we can stop. But before that, out of the three gods, there are three kinds of energies also come, incidentally. All the three gunas of Prakriti. Out of Vishnu emerges Sattu Guna, the balancing. Out of Brahma emerges Rajogun, creating. Out of Shiva, Tamogun, destruction. These three energies, triple soul forces, when you read in Savitri. Origin is there. And so these are the three. So Tamogun, but what Shiva does, he destroys and liberates. That's his task. Imperfect creation he will destroy. He doesn't care about it, liberates. But Vishnu will harmonize. So their mode of action is very different, even though they are one God and they have to work in tandem. But this is our journey, which is a slow process of evolution through which we are moving towards some final perfection. That is not there actually in the scriptures. If you read the scriptures, you will not find that ultimate aim. There is a word used Maya, there is a word used Leela, there is a word used to become God, and there is some truth in that, becoming God, because out of Purusha everybody has come, that sacrifice of the Purusha. We are not talking of that story today. So there is a tendency in creation to want to become like that. So man is created in God's image, he should become like God. But it has been misunderstood as only his soul. What is that soul? The psychic element. But psyche came here to work with the Divine Mother. The entire field of nature must also become divine, because nature is also emerged from, ultimately from the one Shakti. Just as the three gods have emerged from her, the three powers have emerged from her, so all these triple soul forces have also emerged from her, the Trigunatmak Prakriti. But in her origin, she is infinite Shakti. So when we turn to her, she carries the whole journey in this way. So the last story was that of the gods and the titans, Brahma decides that these fellows, I must teach them true wisdom. Otherwise, they are always fighting. So he calls Indra and Virochana. Come, I'll tutor you. I am the creator. I know what this whole thing is about. So he calls. They come. He says, tell us. He says, what is there to tell? You should know. Aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. All of you have come out of me. But though Brahma and Brahman are different things. But Aham Brahmasmi. I am the one, the original creator. I am the divine. As simple. Yes. Both go back. Now Virochana goes and says, I am divine, everybody is divine, let's enjoy and party. He mistakes the body and the life for being divine. Indra thinks that he has said, is it so simple, I am divine, means what? I am all the time changing, even my throne is not secure. But God is the stable basis. So he comes back and says, sir, some problem. I have a doubt. You see, asuras are arrogant. They will never ask further. So they will catch a knowledge by the wrong end. So Indra goes, he says, okay, yes, you are right. Okay, then he gives number of examples and the story goes 108 times he comes back and forth. Then he discovered that behind all the principles of existence which are ever changing, the divine is that stable basis. That's why we have the stable basis, Shiva and Kali dancing over in a lot of images like that. Divine is the stable basis on whom existence is playing. So Lakshmi is managing the affairs and Vishnu Bhagavan is sleeping. He's always shown as the stable basis on whom the dance of Prakriti is taking place. Now we understand the stable basis of Sankhya, self, and the Prakriti which is dancing. They're not disjointed. It's the basis, support. So, when we remember that I am Brahman, the eternal, can you imagine what power, what empowerment it can give us? Nothing can destroy, nothing can touch me. Whatever changes may take place, still I remain ever the same. So I'll just read that small little passage and then we will stop. Sri Aurobindo, the Ishavasya Upanishad, page 129. Remember therefore that all you do, create, destroy, you are doing, creating and destroying in Brahman. This Brahman is not Brahma, God, but that vast impersonal universal basis behind all existence. He is the condition of all your deeds. The more you realize and intensify in yourself Brahman as a notion of spiritual force, the mightier will be your creation and your destruction. You will approach nearer and nearer to Godhead. For the spirit is all and not the body, of which you should only be careful as a vehicle of the spirit. Only importance of body is instrument. Supposing your pen breaks, what do? You pick up another pen, isn't it? You don't say, oh my God, catastrophe has fallen. Supposing your sword is broken, you'll pick up another sword to fight. So, all these are, the body is destroyed. Take care by all means, but not that I am the body. So this we have to remember. For without the presence of spirit which gives Prakriti the force to act, Prakriti would be inert, nay, could not exist. For what is Prakriti itself but the creation of the mighty Shakti who is without end and without beginning, the Shakti of the Eternal. Without some jnana, some knowledge and feeling of the spirit within you, your work cannot be great. He's not saying you have to realize all this. Some jnana, some knowledge, some feeling that I am that. Some connectivity, that's enough. She will start pouring. One prayer is enough to form a point of contact. Otherwise, the work will never be great. Your work cannot be great. And the deeper your jnana, the greater your work. All the great creators have been men who felt powerfully God within them. Whether they were Devic of the Olympian type like Shankara or Asuric of the Titanic type like Napoleon. So, you know, they are also in the original sense, you know, they also have derived from, you remember now this boon, Madhu Ketab, they also asked boon from Mahamaya. They are also by her Shakti. So both type derive their strength. There are even, instruments of the Asura. And they do their own work. In the original Vedic sense, Asura is not the opposite. That is the other part, which, you know, but an aspect or the force of God. Just as the gods represent the knowledge of God, knowledge aspect. Only the Asura, his jnana being limited and muddled, is always confusing the eternal with the grosser and temporary manifestations of Prakriti, such as his own vital passions of lust and ambition. He thinks that this is me. So therefore, he is mistaking the gross for the subtle. He thinks this body is me. And therefore, he is confused and befuddled. The Deva, being sattvic and a child of light, sees clearer. When Napoleon cried out, "What is the French Revolution? I am the French Revolution." Now this is the dangerous thing. The moment he did it, he gave utterance to that sense of his being more than a mere man, of his being the very force and power of God in action, which gave him such a stupendous energy and personality. But his mind, being muddled by rajas, passion and desire, he could not see that the very fact of his being the French Revolution should have pointed him to higher and grander ideals than the mere satisfaction of his vital part in empire and splendor. See, the line is very thin between a Deva and an Asura. I am the creator. Finished. Started going down. Creation is being done through me. The whole creation is, there is one power which is acting. Right track. Not if he would have done it, that it should have spurred him to be the leader of insurgent humanity. That's why the French Revolution failed, though the seeds carried on. That's the beauty, you know, ultimately. Not the trampler down of the immortal spirit of nationality, which was a yet greater and more energetic manifestation of the eternal spirit than himself. Therefore he fell. Therefore the Adi Shakti, the mighty Devi Chandi, Ranarangini, Nimunda Malini, withdrew from him her Varabhaya and fought against him till she had crushed and torn him with the claws of her lion. Had he fallen as the leader of humanity, he could not have fallen then. But yet, if he had fallen, his spirit would have conquered after his death and ruled and guided the nations for centuries to come. So, the importance take-home point is, get therefore jnana, the pure knowledge of Brahman within you, and show it forth in nishkam karma. Why nishkam karma? Naturally, you are not the doer, you cannot appropriate the result. If you feel that it is the Divine Mother working within you, how can you? It's natural, you are not the doer, you know it. How can you seek the results or reward? It may come, it's a different thing. The Divine Mother can give anything and she can take away everything. Whatever comes, you receive as her prasad. But you know she is the doer. Then that is the pure knowledge. Pure knowledge always pours out in nishkam karma. In selfless work for your people, for your country, for humanity, for the world. Then will you surely become Brahman even in this mortal body. And by death, take upon yourself eternity. So this is the path very clearly shown to man. Recover that divine self hidden inside us. Know that we are all divine in truth. Not in this mind, body, limited personality and limited body. But in our deep essence. And by remembering, by meditating upon them, that truth, by reflecting upon that, by reminding ourselves, hammering into the head this idea, we slowly begin to realize it. For us, it's very simple. Mother and mother's child. She has made it very simple for us. Then when we recover it, the works also become mighty. The force begins to flow through this limited instrument. And even though it is limited by the instrument, it starts modifying the instrument. Even sometimes breaking it apart and says, no, I will build a better body for you. You see, there is a prayer of the mother where she says, let all this dissolve so that a new body may come forth. Because now you have handed over yourself to her. But the sign of that person is selfless. Wants nothing for oneself. It's a selfless work. For whom? For everybody. Be it for your people, so-called. For the country. Your people means those who are around you. For the country. For humanity. For world. And ultimately, the divine himself. So when we live in that state, then nothing can affect us. Even if we die, death comes, death of the body. We go back, we are conscious of the eternal. We go consciously singing to the Divine Mother. Ha, Mother, I come. Not like, oh, kya ho raha hai, corona ho gaya, ye ho gaya. We will die. Who will die? You know that you don't die. Death is an illusion created by this whole thing. You know you are eternal. You never die. So the moment you leave the body, you say, okay, fine. Bye-bye. Hippie Bhura. See you. And you go and you go to her heart where you are happy. Then she says, work. Okay, you are happy because here also she is with us. You discover the continuity, the oneness. In ignorance, she is working. She is veiled. In knowledge, she is working. But she is unveiled. When Vishnu shuts his eyelid, she is within, showing in dreams of what must manifest. When Vishnu opens his eyes, the waking state, limited, but that's also, this is the difference between ignorance and knowledge. Both places the divine is there. The difference is In ignorance, we don't know. And in knowledge, we know it. This is the difference between ignorance and knowledge. And by divine oneness, the Satchitananda, not my religious divine, it's not about belief. And when in ignorance we don't know, we suffer, like the asuras. When we know it, we rejoice. Even if in a dress of beggar walks the mighty one. So we'll stop here. Namaste.